Hey everybody, my name is Nick Jaworski from Podcast Monster, and you may not know me, but I have been editing Real Crime Profile for about the past year, and it has been sort of a journey of getting to spend time listening carefully to such smart people talk about such important topics. And we've got a little bit of a different episode, this little bonus episode for you this week. Last week, Laura, Jim, and Lisa sat down for a Facebook Live, and it was so great to hear from so many listeners. They answered all kinds of listener questions in the moment, and Lisa read from some listener letters that she had received from the past year. So if you weren't able to tune into the Facebook Live, you can go watch it on Facebook on the Real Crime Profile page, or you can listen to this edited version right here. So I hope you enjoy it, and happy holidays.
It's so good to see you all.
Hi, everyone.
Okay, so we do have some questions from people and questions that I've been gathering over the past year. I'm sorry, I haven't gotten back to every single person. You know, we get just a deluge of people, not just, you know, writing us questions, but also, you know, suggesting cases, but also just thanking Jim and Laura for things that they've learned. We have people who have gotten out of toxic relationships, who've identified really dangerous people in their lives because of the things that you all have warned us about. And a little bit later, hi, Diane from Yerba Linda. I want to talk
about- Let's not call them toxic relationships. I mean, this is one of my pet peeves that I rant on and on about.
Okay.
Because there's always one person who creates the problem. So
that's
not toxic person in a relationship.
Toxic person in a relationship.
Or an abusive person in a relationship.
Absolutely.
Want to make sure they're visible.
Absolutely. There were two people who emailed me and I got their permission to say their questions, and they are emblematic of the kind of questions we get. They kind of represent just hundreds and hundreds. So I was wondering if I could just snapshot what it is. And one of them is a woman who's saying that she was dating somebody very toxic at one point. Luckily, she broke up with them and went on with her life, but she's really worried that he now, years later, could be out there hurting someone. And, you know, he just exhibited all kinds of the course of control things that you say, choking, throwing her across the room, lying constantly, strangled her a couple of times, used to threaten her for money. And she'd lock herself in the bathroom and he'd kick the door in. I mean, and now she's gotten out of it. Now she sees how really dangerous she was. She never reported him, but now she's really worried that she saw him punch his own sister in the face. And maybe we a lot of us have memories of people who were like this in our lives, and we're just scared now for the other women who are out there. Do either of you have any advice about what we do about that?
Yeah, well, firstly, well done for getting out of the relationship safely, because that's not an easy thing to do. Secondly, it depends which country she's in, actually, Lisa. Do we know? Is it UK or
I believe
US?
She's in the US. She's in the US.
So US, because I would say if you're in the UK and you do want to do something about it, then you can call Crime Stoppers and make a report anonymously. You don't have to give all your details, etc.
It's a great idea.
Yeah, and Crime Stoppers actually have an initiative where they deal with domestic violence cases and abusers, and then they put it into the police force, and then there should be some proactive work done. So there is an initiative specifically for that, something I've pushed for many years. In the US, I mean, you can still report someone if she did want to do that. And this is exactly why I've been pushing for the serial perpetrator campaign and register. And I just want to quickly say some really big news that has happened today, because it's really pioneering and it's a huge success for my campaign and for all the people, women and men, who've been behind this campaign, because it's gone on for 20 years, the campaign work. And we have finally had success today in the announcement from the Chief Police Council and the College of Policing. So there's a new national framework coming in for the police. It's a national framework around violence against women and male violence in particular, where the second pillar of it is targeting perpetrators and a relentless, proactive set of principles around targeting men of violence is coming in. So that when reports are made, something then has to happen around those perpetrators. So that's the serial piece. the most dangerous and prolific and serial perpetrators now are within a national strategy. And I am absolutely elated because it's just been huge. I feel like this weight has lifted off my shoulders, having come from the police background. And now my work has paid off in the police, because once the police do this, everybody else follows suit. And Jim knows this. You know, the police culture can be very can-do, but there's been lots of blockers on this. And it is really important. And I do just want to say that the anniversary of you met Celia Peachy, her mother, Maria Stubbings, she's been campaigning with me. Maria Stubbings was murdered, stalked and murdered by a serial perpetrator who had killed his first girlfriend in Germany. And Celia's been part of this. And I just told her the news and she messaged me back elated, saying, it's the anniversary of my mum's murder today. And this news, it's almost like it's come full circle, is the best news that I could hear. And we had her on Real Crime Profile. So talking to a lot of victims, survivors, but today we've had this announcement. So I'm really, really pleased. So I just wanted to let our listeners know that, because many of you signed the petition, just under 265,000 people used their voice and we got loud and change is happening. So 20 years later, it just shows, doesn't it? Never give up. Never, ever give up, because 20 years on, this is now going to happen in 2022.
That's amazing.
That's amazing. That's so encouraging.
It really is. So whoever you are listening to this, I know many women have had experience at the hands of men who they suspect have done it to other women, or they leave the relationship safely and now they're worried about future women. And what I will say is, it's not your responsibility, but I know many of you will feel that it is about protecting other women. So if you do want to report it, then please do. There are networks across in the US, in Australia, there are forums that you can go on, like what happened with John Meehan. Do you remember with Dirty John, women lightsabers, where you could go on a forum and put information about men that you've dated where they've been violent and abusive to warn other women? But I would primarily encourage women to report things, because if it isn't reported, it might look like somebody has a clean history, that they haven't done things in the past. And that can be the biggest blocker to actually police taking action, because a perpetrator will say, well, this is the only time I've done it. It's the first time. Or they might say, she's completely mad, she's lying. And therefore, there isn't that history. So we want to make sure that violent men's histories are on the intelligence databases and are on the crime reports. Jim, did you want to weigh in?
Yeah, just it's one of the most frustrating things in the world to find out after the fact that the person that came within your purview has actually been involved in previous crimes that were never reported. And unfortunately, what that does is it kind of ties the hands of the cops, but it also can make some cops believe, well, this person, it was just an aberration. It's a one-time thing. It will never happen again, because a lot of these guys, these offenders that are prolific, are very skilled at worming their way through the system and kind of deftly having the system step aside and let them have a pass. But if you can make a record, and that record could be added and multiplied over time, and then when the cops then see this person come into their purview again, that's when they can actually, they'll realize, wow, this is not just a one-time thing. This guy's lying. He's very smooth. We have to do something about it. And it's just, I know that there's a balance, because obviously it's very difficult sometimes if your living situation is so tied to a person. It's very difficult to take those steps. And as you said, Laura, and have, as they portrayed pretty accurately in the series made, it's an average of 7 times before someone is able to leave an abusive relationship. And that unfortunately means the offender gets away with it at least 6 times. And that shouldn't happen. Nobody should be abused even one time. But if we work together, if we share information, as they did in Australia, I thought that was an amazing organization, basically, to have a record of who's doing what to whom, so that it isn't just swept under the rug. I think that kind of thing can be very helpful to law enforcement and yes, to the victims.
Although I will say, Jim, abuser, because you just jumped into the abusive relationship thing. And
I'm sorry.
Really easy to do.
Yeah. Whenever I say that, what I mean is when there is an abuser in a relationship, that becomes abusive, but it is the fault of one person, not of both.
Yeah. And the language is so challenging. I was just listening to two men discuss it this morning of, and they kept saying abusive situation, abusive household, you know, as if the household is abusive. So it's so easy to fall into that. But just to say that the College of Policing and National Police Chief Council, I have tweeted about it this morning, their exact pillars are the pursuit of perpetrators, and it's to relentlessly pursue and actively manage and target the most dangerous and prolific perpetrators, and to better use police powers to protect women and girls, to manage and disrupt perpetrators. So that's the problem-solving piece. And there's another plank to it, which is to adopt a trauma-aware approach at all levels to better support victims through the criminal justice process and focus on evidence-led prosecutions. And it says where appropriate, although Jim and I would probably argue that evidence-led prosecution should be the standard in every case, because it's ipso facto. I'm not sure why they've put that in particular, but
to remind people who might have forgotten that,
who may forget that evidence is kind of important in this. And the last part of that around pursuit of perpetrators is enhanced supervision of investigations into violence against women and girls. So I'm extremely happy about that, although I would like them to talk about male violence specifically. But it is just such a huge thing. And people who've been listening to the Sophie Toscan Duplantier case, which Jim came on to Crime Analyst. And I have to say, I had an amazing response, Jim, to those episodes, that people, it enjoys the wrong word, but to hear you and I talk through what we believe was the sequence of events and bouncing off of each other, so many people responded to that, just saying it was so interesting hearing our process just unpicked. And it was very in the moment, because we hadn't discussed any of it, and I didn't know what you were going to say, but people were really surprised by what we said. But second to that, the main perpetrator who I then went on to discuss, he did have a history against his first wife, and he wasn't prosecuted. But I believe that there were other women too. And because he wasn't prosecuted, and because it wasn't known about, it was deemed in the newspapers, they weren't allowed to talk about it. This is going back in time. So that was one of the areas that he actually won when he sued the newspapers for defamation. So again, it just shows the repercussions that, you know, we do want people to report men of violence, and we do want prosecutions when men are violent, because otherwise it creates this, what I call a false forensic profile. And we don't want that to happen. We really do want join up. So do listen to the Sophie Toscan Duplantier series. It really is just and Jim and I discussed the Director of Prosecutions report, which was so misogynistic and problematic from so many points that, and I was very happy to have Jim's knowledge and expertise on that case. And it just shows we have to go back to these cold cases, and it is relevant to relook and rethink. And I told Jim that also the case has been reopened. So I helpfully put forward our services, Jim, to the Gardaí, if they were listening to the podcast, that we would happily help them out should they need it.
Right. Well, of course. I mean, that's what our profession is. I mean, we literally are assets for law enforcement and related professionals to use. I mean, we were fortunate enough to work in the places that we worked and get the experience that we have, and we want to share it. I mean, that's one of the reasons why we started this podcast so many years ago, to share the information we've learned in the hopes that it will help people get out of abusive situations and actually understand what's going on behind the scenes, not just simply what you see on the screen or you read on the page, because sometimes that can be slightly misleading, to say the least.
For sure. For sure. We have some people, I don't know if you want to tackle this now. There are some people asking about Ghislaine Maxwell's trial. Do you both have anything to say about what you've been watching? Any opinions about it at this point, at this juncture?
Jim, do you want to weigh in first?
Well, one of the things that I understand is that there'll be expert testimony about grooming. and how some of the things that people call grooming could be innocent gestures. That is absolutely 180 degrees from the truth. The point is, in the context of sexual victimization, that's what sheds light on this behavior. If the behavior is giving people, children or young people, money, access, things that they like, you know, trips, travel, whatever, and they're doing bad things, coercing them into situations where they're being sexually exploited. That is the definition of grooming. And the fact that someone is basically doing something nice to someone they're also taking advantage of does not undo the negative effect of grooming. In other words, it creates an ambivalence on the part of the victims. They need or desire the things that they're getting. And whether that's attention, affection, or assets, that is a draw. And what we do, the sexual exploitation of children laws are there to protect children from their own bad decisions. And there's to protect children when they are being taken advantage of. And this is one of the ways in which it is most effective in not only sexually victimizing children, but in the repeat sexual victimization, the serialized sexual victimization of children. One of the key aspects of that is grooming. And so I'm very disheartened to hear about testimony to the contrary.
Do either of you think that Ghislaine is at all a victim of Jeffrey Epstein?
Well, it's an interesting question, isn't it? And I think that she may well go down that route of positing that through her defense, that she clearly did want to have a relationship with him. And I do believe that he probably made promises to her. And it does sound like she did everything that she possibly could to make him happy. And whether there were promises of having a baby or whatever it might be, I did listen to Amy Ward's podcast, which is on Audible. And I think it's very interesting because there are people on there who haven't spoken out, who were friends with Ghislaine early on. And they basically talked to how charming she was, what a real socialite she was, and actually what a lovely person she was until she met Jeffrey. And then meeting Jeffrey Epstein, she seemed to change over time and seemed to put all her time and energy into making him happy. And then she went into this next level of, you know, sort of billionairesville of taking helicopters everywhere, getting her pilot license to appease him because he wanted her to fly them to different parts of the world and to the island. But I think there's a very thin line here in terms of her responsibility taking. And I do believe that she made those decisions consciously. And the decisions that she took put those young girls into dangerous situations and situations where they were abused. And she was part of that. And she was part of the abuse, too, from the accounts that have been relayed by the Farmer sisters, for example, and by other girls and women. And I have no reason not to believe what they say, particularly as they're in such high numbers of them all saying that she was part of it too. Right. So it wouldn't surprise me, Lisa, if there is a defense. I know the defense started today, didn't they? So it wouldn't surprise me if there's something in there. But what I will say is that it's interesting to me just watching what people are writing on social media, because they're almost making Ghislaine Maxwell out to be somehow worse than Jeffrey Epstein. And I think, again, that falls into this sort of misogyny and double standard that we see women somehow as more wicked, more evil, because they should be more, whatever it is, maternal or more. But actually, I do believe that it was Jeffrey Epstein who was the person who was driving the whole trafficking.
Of course.
It was to meet his needs, wasn't it?
Exactly.
So it's not to say she's not culpable, because I believe that she is. That's my belief and my opinion. But is she more wicked than Epstein? For me, it was him creating this world where all his needs were constantly being met. And from what her friends say and others, and I think we talked about it a bit on Real Crime Profile, there was a dinner party that he had for his birthday where he had male guests attend. I think there were about six of them around a dinner table, and she was putting it all together, providing the entertainment, but she wasn't sat at the table with him. And this was as his partner. She was his partner, and yet she didn't have a place at the table. That speaks volumes to me, that she was behind the scenes making this happen. And I think she brought in some guy to do some sort of limerick or riddle, kind of this riddle about Jeffrey Epstein. And he was made to wear a very bizarre outfit. And it was all about putting Epstein on this pedestal. And Ghislaine was really into this. And that just tells me that she seemed to have lost complete perspective. But was she getting something out of it too? Yes. And I believe that she's responsible and culpable. But of course, the trial is there to look at the evidence and to prove and test that evidence, I should say, and the burden's on the prosecution to do so. But this double standard of seeing women as more wicked, more evil, let's not forget Epstein, there won't be a trial for him, but he was the person at the top of all of this, in my opinion.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I agree, Laura. And we have to be very careful, though. If someone is being victimized, someone who's young and in a less powerful position is being victimized, and they become a victimizer and they're still a child. I tried when I was a prosecutor to take that seriously into consideration and sometimes drop charges against a child who was being victimized and then joined in the victimization of younger children. But once that person becomes an adult, we, as a society, put the responsibility upon them to act like an adult and protect children. You can't continuously be victimized and as an adult and victimize others. At some point, you have to take responsibility. And in fact, in many cases, it is when a child is sort of kicked out of this ring of abuse and sees younger siblings or younger friends being victimized, that they step forward and they make a complaint about the abuse. That is what you have to do. You cannot continue this ripple effect of more and more victimization, more and more child victims, more and more young adult victims. You can't do that and then hide behind the fact that you were once victimized. It's not legitimate. If you were victimized, that's a horrible thing, and nobody should have to go through that. But there are resources available and you should get help. And this whole myth that once you become victimized, you become a victimizer is just complete and total trash. This situation that Ghislaine Maxwell is in is not the typical case. It is not what happens to everybody who's victimized. And that's something that needs to be said and needs to be enforced. So my heart can go out to her if she was victimized and feel bad for her. But once she starts as an adult victimizing others, I'm sorry, I can't get behind that. I can't in any way justify that. She should have been strong enough to protect others, if not to step out of it and to protect herself. That should have been the change. Okay, everybody, I know none of you are as old as I am because I'm as old as dirt, but if you're like me, you're starting to feel your age. And for me, that means my back and my feet ache much of the time. So I thank my lucky stars for Homedics. You should check out Homedics too. They've got a whole line of massage products, from a massage gun with built-in hot and cold technology to a massage cushion that lets you lie down or sit up depending on your therapeutic needs, to a 3-in-1 foot massager with vibration so powerful it loosens the muscles in your legs and lower back. I'm using mine now. I use it whenever I record. It's amazing. The greatest thing is that Homedics has massagers that can deal with your pain from head to toe. And believe me, I need it. I love my massage cushion and my foot massager. They're both amazing. Homedics was founded by a Detroit family in 1987 because they wanted to help make people's lives better. And now they're the established leader in wellness and home health innovations. And they have an A+ Better Business Bureau rating. So they're a brand you can rely on and trust. Whether you're dealing with chronic pain or just looking to help your muscles recover from a workout, we've got good news for you. Right now, if you go to homedics.com/realcrime and use promo code realcrime, you'll receive a free portable phone sanitizer when you buy $100 or more in massage products. That's a $60 value. That's homedics.com/realcrime and use the promo code realcrime for your free portable phone sanitizer with a $100 massager purchase.
Don't you love skincare products that don't just make you look good, but actually do good in the world? That's why I love using Thrive Cosmetics, and that's Cause, C-A-U-S-E, Cosmetics. Thrive Cosmetics are made with clean, high-performance, skin-loving ingredients. They're formulated without parabens, sulfates, and phthalates, and they're never tested on animals. My favorite product that I'm using right now is the Overnight Sensation Brightening Sleep Mask, because I love going to sleep and waking up with smoother, brighter, more hydrated complexion, and with tons of antioxidants packed into this spa-inspired overnight mask. But I think most of all, what I love about Thrive Cosmetics is their bigger-than-beauty mission. Because for every product purchased, their commitment to support nonprofit partners with a donation of funds or products is truly inspiring. And it's beauty that goes beyond skin deep. One of their giving partners is the Foundation for Women Warriors, which focuses its mission on empowering women veterans re-entering civilian life. Visit thrivecosmetics.com/realcrime for 15% off your first order. This is an exclusive offer you can only get here. That's Thrive, CauseMetics.com/realcrime for 15% off your first order. thrivecosmetics.com/realcrime.
I have another a letter from a listener that, and again, it's indicative of so many that we get. This woman is still connected to her abuser. They're divorced, but they're sharing custody of their children. She's given me permission to read the letter, but I'm not going to, and I don't want to identify her in any way. But they have two children together, and you guys, you both have pointed this out before, that the abuser uses the children or the pets to get back at the partner. And this is exactly what her husband is doing, is when her children are with him, they have one child who has allergies and he refuses to bring along an EpiPen that is supposed to be there at all times. He hits them. He emotionally, physically, and mentally abuses them. And she just doesn't seem to know what to do. If she wants to keep her kids safe, you know, she's the one who is going to get in trouble with the court, and she just doesn't seem to know what to do. I mean, what do you think?
It has to be done through the court. The most important thing is to document in excruciating detail every single incident like this. And if the first time or the second time doesn't do it, maybe the 15th time or the 25th time, it'll finally get through to the judge. But that you have to use the legal process. Just as he is trying to skirt around the legal process, you have to use it. It's the only way legitimately to get this done.
So hard, because they're afraid to go to his house. You know, they beg not to go to daddy's house. That's just terrible. The worst feeling, like you're handing them over to someone that you know is traumatizing them.
Right. Well,
do we know which country she's in?
She's here.
She's in the US. I mean, I would certainly advise her to speak with Professor Joan Meyer, who we had on Real Crime Profile when we were talking about Allen versus Farrow. And she's a professor of clinical law. She's a lawyer, but handles a lot of domestic abuse related cases and custody related cases. So I would take a first sounding from a specialist lawyer who works in family court. Many lawyers will say you don't want the case to go through the family court because it really does victimize women and children. And that's what Joan was telling us and what we've heard from many lawyers all around the world. And Jess Hill's book in Australia exposed that too. And the family court process in the UK is being exposed as well. So I would certainly say it's very hard for women to protect their children from the abuser, particularly through the family justice system, but I would first of all have an on-the-record conversation with a specialist lawyer in the family court to see what your options are. But that does sound very worrying. And what I will say is that a person who is abusive, or a man in particular who is abusive to their partner, does not make a good father. And there are countries in the world who just give contact, even though they might abuse the mum, and say, well, they might be a good enough father still. And the UK is one of those countries. So we were shedding light on all the problems in the family court. So yeah, do reach out to Professor Joan Meyer. And if she can't give you advice, there will be somebody else that she will advise you to speak to.
A lot of people don't know who to reach out to. And that's why I try to repost and post, you know, resources on our page. But there were so many resources on Jim, the National Center for Victims. Their page has so many resources. I had no idea. I've been trying to repost them. That's just such a great website for people to go to, and I'll post it again. But some people just feel so alone. But there really are just so many groups and advocates that do want to help.
Yeah, there are lots absolutely. Of specialists out there, but you only know it when you work in it. So the National Center is definitely a good place. And we've just dropped our first episode with Richard and Mariana. So to our listeners, please do listen to that, because there's a lot of interesting things in there. And actually, they were a delight to interview, both of them, weren't they? So I think that's the important work that they're doing, building bridges. But all around the world, there are great advocates. There are great specialists out there who will listen to you and will advise you. Not many of them are trained on coercive control currently. That's sort of a gap in knowledge, but please do. And there's lots of resources and information on my website, and also on Real Crime Profile's website as well. And Lisa, changing the subject a little bit here, is that an Ana Luisa necklace that you are wearing?
It is. Thank you for noticing. This is their, I guess it's called like a paperclip chain.
The paperclip. Yes, I've got the same.
Did you go? Yeah. Good. I have a bracelet too, but I need somebody to help me to put it on. And Ellie couldn't manage it this morning. Yes. So please go over to Ana Luisa if you haven't. We do have a discount that they're offering you if you use our
Real Crime.
They have just lovely
10%.
They have just lovely, lovely things. Which one did you
get? This is Ana Luisa as well.
Yeah.
So yes, do have a look. You've got lots of brilliant ideas on there for gifts, or maybe just treat yourself. Why not?
And now that you bring it up, I just want to say something about our sponsors. Thank you. We are so grateful to our sponsors. You know, they help keep us on the air and not behind a paywall. And, you know, we turn down a lot of sponsors because we want to make sure that the things that we're promoting are things that we really use, that we think that you would appreciate. And every time, you know, of course, we get free things to try, but I do continue to use them. And I always love to go to their websites and make sure that they have offerings that are in all different kinds of price points. So I don't have it right here, but I've been using the Homedics massager thing.
Oh, the massage cushion is amazing.
Constantly. I love it. It is so good. And they've got all different kinds of price points. So, you know, do check out our sponsors. They support we can't do this without you, y'all listeners, but we really also can't do it without our sponsors. So please, you know, check out their offerings, and that really helps us for sure.
Yeah, the home cushion for the back and also the foot massager are amazing. And one of the things that surprised me the most, Lisa, about motherhood is the backache that comes with breastfeeding. And massage cushion, it's literally like it was sent to me by a divine intervention, the thing that I really wanted at this. And then it arrives. Absolutely amazing. I know, Jim, you like the foot massager
yes,
as well.
Yes, I do. Cool. I'm using it right now. So just,
are you?
Just to be honest. Yes.
I know. It just tucks
it
in
keeps
everywhere.
My feet.
It's really, really good.
Somebody asked the question about JG and why he would bury bodies under his floorboards. And you know, I think a lot of what you said, whether it's the fact that he was just, you know, the hubris of it, the laziness of it, and the fact that he could actually enjoy, because he was a sexual sadist and a psychopath, he could enjoy knowing that all these boys and young men that he killed were just below his feet. And when people came over and when even when the police came over, not knowing them, not knowing what was right below them. He probably got off on that. And it's a horrible, horrible thing. And he's, you know, one of the worst offenders that we've ever had in this country. And one of the sadistic ones, that it's just so terrible that these guys fell victim to him. So I would say that it's all part of his psychopathy. It's all part of his sick, twisted MO. That's why he did it there. And it wasn't until he started running out of space there that he started disposing of the bodies outside.
I just want to say, somebody asked me just a quick question. Luca, could I cover the old Australian film called Wolf Creek? That is one of the most frightening films. It's based on a true story about a serial killer in the outback of Australia. And yes, I would cover it. It's a very upsetting film, but yes, I would be happy to cover that. Both of you, there's a question about, has to do with double jeopardy. This listener understands that the U.S. inherited it from the English law system, but double jeopardy was hundreds of years old in the U.K. and it's been abandoned there for a long time. And they don't understand why the U.S. still has it. It's made murderers free people. What do you think about that?
Well, what they're talking about is the fact that in England, you can be tried a second time. In the U.S., you cannot. And it has some benefits, but I do agree. Sometimes it makes it very difficult because there's a mistake made or there's some kind of information that isn't available yet. Many times, double jeopardy in the U.S., which means you can't be tried twice for the same crime, that many times prosecutors will hold off on prosecuting someone for a very, very long time because they don't think that they have enough information and they're hoping that in the future they will. So that means that the killer is still out there, which really sucks. Let's put it bluntly. But at the same time, what it does is it makes sure that, you know, it's not, there is an end to the process. And it's supposed to be a right granted to everyone. And if you're acquitted of murder, you can't be tried again for it. However, in the U.S., what we do have is state laws and federal laws. And those laws, if your bad behavior, if your criminal behavior violates both state and federal laws, like we saw recently with a particular cop who killed George Floyd, he was not only prosecuted in the state courts, but he was then prosecuted for civil rights violation in the federal courts, and he actually pled guilty to those crimes. And so you can be tried in both state and federal, and that is not considered double jeopardy. So that's the way that we sort of try to catch the situations that the UK's laws actually, they don't have an issue with it.
One of the things that's interesting, just jumping in here, is going back to Ghislaine Maxwell and the immunity deal, is that we don't have that kind of immunity deal system in the UK. So, you know, a lot of people don't realize, I listened to some British experts talking about the trial this morning, and what they don't realize is that there was an immunity deal struck with Alex Acosta and Epstein, wasn't there, back in the day, which right. made a lot of things go away. And I believe Ghislaine was one of those people who was given immunity. And of course, with the Cosby case, it came up again about immunity deals. But we don't have that system in the UK. We could discuss with an offender that if they gave us a piece of information, then it would go to a judge that perhaps they would get some kind of, you know, incentive, but it's not guaranteed. Whereas in the US, it is guaranteed, isn't it, Jim? As we saw with Castor, if it's agreed with the prosecutor, then that is something that is agreed. But as we've talked about before, there has to be some incentive, i.e. you get something back from it. You get some information, or you get, there's some kind of trade-off, that it's not just given just because. And we don't really know with Epstein what the trade-off was, or even with Cosby. So again, just some difference in the systems. There are some big differences in America's criminal justice system to the UK. And we did have double jeopardy that came in. It was actually a new thing that came in, and it's been stopped again. I'm not really sure exactly the reasons why, But I did work on one of the first cases it was used. It was used in the murder of a young girl called Cassandra McDermott, who was murdered at the hands of a semi-pro footballer who was acquitted for her murder. And then he went on to try and kill another young woman who he had a relationship with, Cara Hoyt. The case was really fascinating. It was a brilliant DCI, Nick Scola, who was the lead investigator. And Cara Hoyt had blunt force trauma to her head. She almost died. She was in hospital in a coma. And she spelt out the offender's name. The only thing she could do was blink, and she spelt out his name by blinking. And he was then prosecuted for a second time because of Cara's, the attempt murder on her, for a second time for Cassandra McDermott, and he was found guilty. So that's one of the real success cases where it was used. But I think those two areas are two significant areas of difference between the US and the UK.
Laura, you just reminded me, I'm sure you heard this case a few weeks ago about a young woman who was being abducted who used the symbol in the window. Mm-hmm. And some savvy person recognized it and called the police, and she was rescued. Sometimes I see those memes and I'm like, is this really the symbol, or is this for real? I mean, there was that tale about if you're in a bar and you hand the bartender, I don't know. So are those signals real?
And well, I saw the police officer show that symbol, and all it has to do is be capable of conveying the message. It worked in that case. So even if it worked in one case, I'd say it's real.
Right. Are there other things that we should know about? I forget what it is in the bar. Maybe one of our listeners knows.
Well, there's always SOS.
Right.
Save our souls. ... If you can tap it out. And also just the letters SOS. And then, of course, if you're in the trunk of a car, there's usually a release valve that will open the trunk now from the inside because of cases of abduction, but also kicking out one of the taillights is a great way to get the police, any police that might see the car, to pull over the car and give you an opportunity. So those are things that can help. But I always say, and I'll never change this as far as I know, if somebody tries to take you to a second location, take you away from someplace where you are, it's typically because they have more security, privacy, and control where they're taking you. And that never, never helps the victim. Fight them with everything you have at the first location. You won't likely get a better chance to do it. Scream, kick, bite, tear off their ears, poke out their eyes, do whatever you have to do to get away from somebody. So if you're afraid they're going to hurt you, why would you be less afraid that they're going to hurt you in a place where they have more control?
Absolutely. Totally agree with that. Do whatever you have to do. Even if they have a gun, run, zigzag as you go, the chance of them hitting you lessen. So really important. Never go to a secondary location. And the other thing that actually was launched in the UK after the lockdown because of the pandemic was Ask for Annie, which is a code word. So if you're out in shops or whatever, you can go into a pharmacy, for example, and ask for Annie, which means action needed immediately. So these things have come in more and more because obviously the pandemic has meant that many victims have been locked at home with the abuser. And so trying to give people different outlets that even in the small windows of time where they might be out and about, that they can ask for help, and using that code word. So it has proved effective. I'm not sure how effective across time, but there was a lot of publicity over it when it first came out. I think it was around January of this year.
Some people are saying it's if you order an angel shot, that's a code. Or if you ask for Angela at a bar, it's probably similar to ask for Annie at a bar. Going to stay one step ahead of these abusers, right? Because then they learn the code.
Absolutely.
And they know what you're doing. Okay, what else? I know we're going to get to recommendations soon, things that we would be recommending. Do we have any other questions? Any other federal domestic violence laws that are currently being considered we should be looking out for, Laura?
Yeah, so we've got the new law in Connecticut and Hawaii and California, but now it's on the books in New York. So I'm talking to a number of advocates again over there and maybe going to Albany at some point. But there's lots of states that have now woken up and lots of legislators to coercive control. And I'm also talking to lots of people about serial perpetrators. I think most people understand the nature of travel, that people, when the world is normal and people traveling around, that you need the same approach to tackling serial and serious men of violence or repeat offenders more generically in America and Australia and in the UK, all across the globe, basically, because people do travel. So I'm talking to lots of different states about that. So yes, I think there's lots of good things that are happening, but it's just very slow. You know, and the more, obviously, with the pandemic, the Omicron and all the variants that keep happening, it takes people's eyes and attention off of things that we need to be doing to keep victims safe and tackling the perpetrators, being on the proactive when talking about perpetrators and not just, you know, it really gets my goat. It's a very British phrase. I don't know if it translates here in America.
Yeah, we have it too.
I always come out with these things. I never use them when I'm in the UK, but here people always look very puzzled when I say things like that. But it does get my goat when we're always counting victims. You know, we know how many rape victims there are, how many child abuse cases there are. And of course, there's the hidden figure, but who's counting the perpetrators? Why aren't we saying, you know, we all know people who've been abused and violated, but no, people would say, well, they don't know any perpetrators. Well, of course you do. And we need to sort of change the focus so that we're creating campaigns and marketing and publicity, which Scotland have done effectively recently, which has men talking and them talking about rape and what's acceptable and what's not. So you want key messaging going out and you want your strategies about perpetrators, not women's safety, even violence against women and girls. You know, let's focus on the problems and talk about the perpetrators more. And I think that's the cultural shift that's slowly starting to happen.
Someone else is asking you if you think that how the U.S. is doing on de-escalating tension between law enforcement and victims, or, you know, law enforcement when they're on the job.
It's a hell of a problem, partially because the negative effects of it and the violence. I mean, none of that is good. I don't agree that violence is a good way to, I mean, committing crimes to try to prevent other people from committing crimes it's wrong. I mean, you have to take the high moral ground. You have to do sort of the Gandhi and the Martin Luther King nonviolent approach. I mean, protest, lawful protest is great, but when you start getting to violence, I don't agree with it. However, I do think that law enforcement has to have a change in their attitudes, because many of them, and I will say this unequivocally, most law enforcement officers are in place doing the right thing, doing it properly. There are millions of interactions every day across this country with law enforcement, and the vast majority of them are nonviolent and proper. But there are some who feel an entitlement and an exhibit an aggressiveness. And when Laura and I interviewed, now I'm going to forget his name, Jim from the UK, the professor,
James Densley,
he said something interesting. In the UK, the police rule by consent. In the US, they rule by force. And that's something that is a vicious circle. If you come in forcefully and aggressively, you're never going to de-escalate. And that's the problem. So that attitude has to change. And there has to be instilled in police officers a service code. Many of them have it. But there are cases in which if the police officers had come in, even to a questionable situation as, excuse me, sir, I need to talk to you, instead of stop, get on the ground, you know, or putting their hands on someone immediately, things like that, that kind of stuff can cause people to stiffen up and react badly. And then again, it escalates instead of de-escalates. Police officers should have more training in de-escalation. I agree. It's something that would be much more helpful. It will reduce the number of shootings that policemen are involved in. They have to be safe. There are people who literally are bent on killing cops, and that is a major crime, and it should never happen. So the police officers have to be safe. And one of the problems is that, like with the community, we now have access as law enforcement officers or as civilians to all of the incidents that happen across this country and around the world. And so it can get people scared on either side, and it can create a real division. They should be working together with our communities. And I know the NYPD and LAPD are both, they both have programs that are doing this. And we're trying to work, my company, XG Productions, is trying to work with them to create more of a working environment, a cooperative environment between the police and the community. And I think those programs have to happen across the board. And if they do, then slowly we will get back to a situation where people respect the police and the police are across the board doing what their job is without creating more problems. So we have to cooperate. Both sides have to cooperate. It can't be done on one side alone. And so it's not just the responsibility of the police to change. It's also the responsibility of the community to work with them so that we can all be safer.
Jason says, Jim looks so calm in person. I think some people were expecting you to, you know, start F-bombing up a storm, and
well, that's okay. I'm in my Christmas spirit, and I do have Snoopy here. Wait, hold on.
Ellie!
There, I have Snoopy here.
Snoopy's influence, I think.
Yeah, Snoopy is always a calming influence.
Ellie, and come here!
I don't know where Buddy is. I think he's afraid of Snoopy, but this is my attempt at a little holiday cheer.
And there was a wonderful compliment here for you, Laura. I've lost it. There's so many people.
Don't lose it, Lisa. Quick, grab it.
I know. I got to go grab it. I'm sorry. It's something about how much they love you and how inspiring you are for them. And I absolutely love seeing those things because, you know, it's so hard for Jim and Laura to continue doing what they do. And I just remember Laura was having a very stressful day one day, just saying, I'm just going to chuck this all and go open a tea shop. And it's like, no.
A tea shop in LA.
No, you're not going to do that. You're going to continue fighting.
It is tough. I mean, it does wear you down and it is exhausting because it's relentless. I will say that. And, you know, now having a son, it changes you again. It's the biggest transformative process, I think, for anyone to become a parent. But I would always keep doing what I do. But the support from people makes a huge difference. So thanks for reading that out, Lisa. And, you know, we all need to have that little boost and reassurance every now and again, because it can, the fight is relentless. Changing laws is relentless. You're battling systems and misogyny and decades and centuries of the patriarchy and people who just don't like strong women trying to create change. So it's really not easy. But Jim and I have always felt strongly about doing the podcast and speaking out wherever and whenever we can. And it's, you know, a real privilege to work on Real Crime Profile. And I hope all our listeners appreciate our content that we, even when we're traveling or having babies and everything else going on, Ellie having operations, we still try and jump on and give you good content because we're very passionate about what we do, but we couldn't do it without you. So thanks to those lovely messages coming in, and keep them coming. We need them.
Please, and please go on over if you haven't, please go leave us a positive 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. It means so much. It helps people find us. A lot of people email us their thanks in private messages. But if you really want to thank us, you know, please go over to wherever you listen to your pods and give us that rating. It just really helps. What cases are we doing in the new year, guys? 2022. I love an even year. Oh. Yes, I love it.
We're going to do Black and Missing, aren't we? We feel that that's a really important documentary for us to cover, which follows on from Indigenous women. You know, I think that the area of people of color is really not talked about as much as it should be. So I've already watched the docuseries, which is on HBO, and it's really powerful. And lots of things that we've talked about on Real Crime Profile come up in each episode, particularly mm-hmm. around serial perpetrators and people not being held to account. So I feel really passionately about covering that. And what else have we got on the books?
You know, there's so many things. I think this year we're going to really try to be responsive in the moment of breaking news, but then also do our deep dives on, you know, cases that you've probably all heard of, but you probably haven't heard the victims of. I would love to do, if we ever could cover an acquaintance of mine who was murdered, the actress, filmmaker, Adrienne Shelley. She was murdered in Manhattan about 10 years ago, and the murderer made it look like a suicide. Mm. And so I think that would be just a really interesting topic to talk about, and how the police figured it out when her husband was saying, there is absolutely no way that my wife killed herself. So that's one case I'd love to talk about. What about you, Jim?
I certainly, you know, suggested that we do Black and Missing. You know, we will constantly be striving to both look for the news reporting and the documentary series reporting that we see, as well as scripted series, because although scripted series are not necessarily telling true stories, they do affect people and the community in general, and they can have a tremendous and profound effect on society as a whole. I think, you know, that was demonstrated significantly when, for example, the X-Files came out. I mean, it's unfortunately, it's all very fanciful, but applications to the FBI increased tenfold during that time period. And when LA Law, where they had strong female lawyers, 20% higher enrollment in law school by females at that time. Criminal Minds, the number of people studying forensic psychology now versus when that show started in 2005, by the way, that has changed dramatically. And that's a wonderful thing to have such a positive effect. So we will be continuing to do those, to look at all those things. For there's obviously so much more material than we can actually cover all the time, because we do it in a very in-depth way. We don't simply just gloss over the surface of it. We dive deep, maybe an overused term, but we actually do analysis, and we tell you from our experience what we have learned and what we see. And many times that's sort of hidden under the surface. And so Laura and I really make an effort to dive deep into that. And we really appreciate your input, Lisa, and your ability to sort of call out the questions that people who don't have the background that Laura and I have, that what they might see or the questions they might have. So we'll continue to do that. And as you said, Lisa, we're also going to do our best to try to, you know, weigh in on things that are happening now as they happen, because I think it's important to sort of counter what the news does is little 4 to 5 minute hits on a topic. And people think, oh, well, that's everything. But that's not it at all. Because you could do 40 to 50 minutes on a topic and still not scratch the surface. So we're going to try to do more of that and stay, you know, keep our finger on the pulse of what's going on, and, you know, and still cover the sort of historic cases that I think are our bread and butter.
Yeah, and send us what you would like us to talk about. We don't just do things just for the sake of it. We want to ensure that we are covering things that are important to people. So again, you know, rather than just say a generic term, tell us the case you'd like us to talk about, or something, you know, specific, then we'd be happy to put it into the lineup of the things that we've got scheduled. But we will be doing more timely things. I think that's certainly with Gabby Petito. I know we had a huge response to Gabby's case, and there's still so much more learning. I'm actually going to do a deep dive of it on Crime Analyst. I promised my listeners that I would do. And I think it's important now. There's so much more information that's known. For example, I always said right from the start, I said it on 60 Minutes, that he will no doubt take his own life. because I've worked so many of those cases, and that's what we tend to see. And I think there's one thing about Jim and I lending our knowledge and expertise when we're in the moment, but there are other things that you need to wait till cases have run their course, as it were, because you don't know whether there's going to be any legal repercussions. But now we know Brian was found dead. He did take his own life. So there's more to say about that case in particular, which of course created a huge, well, it's a watershed moment, I think, people wanting to consume and hear more. But the knowledge, we don't just tell stories, and there's lots of podcasts out there for storytelling, but we want to make sure that we're actually adding value and giving people knowledge and information and awareness. So yes, let us know. I'm just seeing a comment from someone there saying about the Gabby Petito case, and that they'd seen that I was on 60 Minutes Australia and your partner had called out your British woman from the podcast is now on the telly. So yes, I was 3 weeks out of postpartum when I was asked to do that case, and I was, you know, barely walking, but I still felt it was a very important one to talk about. So let us know other cases you'd like us to cover. So what about year in review, Lisa and Jim, looking at the year and as it's gone, you know, what are the cases that stand out to you, particularly from Real Crime Profile that we've covered? Do you want to go first, Lisa, and then Jim weigh in?
Mm-hmm. I think it was sort of extraordinary from our coverage of Gabby Petito that dominoed into the missing and murdered Indigenous women. I mean, because of our listeners and them making points about, you know, where Gabby was found, that had also been the site of many other murders that we never heard of. And then that dominoed into talking about the pedophile pediatrician on the reservation. I mean, that sort of cascade of cases was just so incredible, and you know, and just the interest that the listeners gave us and their thoughts, you know, I think I'm still kind of thinking about all of that. I bet you guys.
I'll say this, and it might surprise people, but I think our coverage of the Cosby case was the most important thing that we did. And it's one of the most painful cases because of the ultimate outcome. But I think it's really important that we helped give the victims a voice and that we still stand behind them, even though some asshole prosecuting attorney screwed up the case by making promises he should never have made, probably because of the celebrity of the offender. But that is something we should, you know, learn from, that we need to protect the victims, and we need to stop letting someone's celebrity or position or gender get in the way of there being justice for those victims. And when somebody is allowed to celebrate their freedom, when victims are still suffering all these years later from their heinous criminal behavior, it's a learning point for this country and for our justice system, that we need to not allow prosecutors to have the discretion to have these secret conversations and agreements with violent offenders so that they can go on. It's the same thing that happened with Epstein, so that they can go on and continue to victimize people, helpless people. That is a learning point for our entire country. In fact, probably for the entire world.
Yeah, it was very profound, I think, that case, and we've stayed with it. And Kevin Steele actually is appealing via the Supreme Court that decision, because it was only in a press release, wasn't it?
Right.
So I think you're right, Jim. It's precedential, and I think it's going to be very interesting to see what happens with the appeal. I'm working with Nikki Weiss and C. Egan, you know, and that case stood out to me too, but also, and it involves Nikki, Victim F.
Yeah,
was the one for me. I think it's one of the hardest cases that we've done on Real Crime Profile. I think the testament to, you know, both victims speaking out, I mean, really difficult to talk about, and we had to handle it very sensitively, but we also wanted to give our analysis of what we felt had happened. And we read the book as well. And Nikki did write a great book, Victim F, which just made me so angry as I was page turning. I think it was just, there's been so much misinformation about the case. via the police department and via the media. And it's so much misogyny. And even now people talk about it being a robbery turned kidnap, where I still believe that it was a sexually motivated offence. And that's what it was, when we understand it was a prolific serial rapist who escalated his behaviour. And of course, as he's trying to stop the rape-related offences going to trial. So I think there's going to be more on that case. And I think you're right, Lisa, the Gabby Petito case, and both of you did a great podcast follow-up on missing Indigenous women. I'm actually going to go on, and I've got an interview lined up with Lonnie Coombs just after Christmas. She's got a great show on Oxygen and on Peacock called Missing and Murdered in Montana, which I'd recommend that people watch, because it's angry making. Lonnie's excellent in it. And I'm going to be talking to her on Crime Analyst, following on from talking about Gabby Petito. Thousands of women have been found, they've gone missing, and there's been big questions about what happened. But I also think that that's a good thing about Gabby's case. It's been talked about in a critical way, but actually every case should have that level of attention, shouldn't it? It's not saying that just because you're a white woman, this white woman syndrome, you shouldn't have the attention. Actually, all cases should have that attention. So I'm really looking forward to talking to Lonnie about three young girls and women who were found missing and no real investigation into what happened to them. And they're just three of thousands of others, of young girls who've gone missing. So it's a big learning curve for me as well, learning about tribal police services that they're some reservation areas. There's only six police officers to cover vast areas, and they have no arrest powers. So I think, you know, when we're talking about predatory perpetrators, where are they going to go, Jim? Where are they going to start to operate when they understand the police system? Because we know that perpetrators learn. So those two cases, or I should say three cases, I've gone in on there, because Cosby, I agree with, and Gabby Petito and Victim F as well.
I almost forgot to mention the Woody Allen, the Mia Farrow documentary we covered. And we actually got, Dylan Farrow actually reached out to us and was very glad about our coverage. I almost forgot about that. And what you two don't know is later, your friend Laura Priscilla reached out to me saying that Mia really is looking for projects to do. So I'm here texting with Mia Farrow, asking her, like, what's next? What do you want to work on? You know, what can I help you? You know, what producer can I help you get connected to? That was crazy. I was like, is this really you? Anyway, but that was just a great series that we
yeah, did. Absolutely. That was great. And
a very important case to talk about.
And I agree about Victim F as well. And I think, there are so many amazing cases that we were able to do some analysis on and hopefully bring some insights and also help encourage the right outcomes on. And so that's something that, we pride ourselves on. We're here to help people, and we're very happy that we're able to do that, at least even in some small measure.
Absolutely. What about podcasts you'd recommend for our listeners to listen to? I mean, Allen versus Farrow was one of the podcasts I was going to recommend for people to listen to, because aside from the documentary, there's new information, new evidence, new voices that are heard. So I would certainly recommend people listen to that. The First Wife, John Meehan's Reign of Terror. Well, it's one of mine. I'm going to recommend it. I mean, come
absolutely,
on. If you don't
absolutely.
Recommend your own stuff, what are you doing? And I'll also recommend Crime Analyst, Wes Cork, my coverage around Sophie Toscan Duplantier, but also around, I don't even want to say his name, but the murderer who was prolific, the serial killer in Yorkshire, West Yorkshire, Manchester, all around the UK, the coverage. I've been asked to write a book on it as well. And I think showing the reframing cases is a really important part of Real Crime Profile, but it's also a very important part of Crime Analyst. And I'm listening to, at the moment, Believe Her, which is hundreds of people emailed me, DM'd me, told me to listen to it. It's the case of Nikki Adimando, who shot and killed her partner, Chris Groves, and She was a young mum. It happened in September 2017. She was clearly a victim of domestic abuse, and she was sentenced to 19 years to life in prison for murder. And she was treated right from the outset, even though it was clear that she had injuries and so on and so forth. None of that was taken into account. So I haven't listened to the whole thing yet. I'm still about halfway through, but that's what I'm listening to at the moment. How about you and Lisa and Jim? How about either of you?
Well, some of the things, the important things that we've been involved in at XG Productions, one will be coming out on January 6th on Paramount Plus. It's called Indivisible, Healing Hate. It's about the division in the country that has been brewing for years and sort of boiled over on January 6th last year. We also released recently After the Fall, which was a podcast or a documentary podcast about the FBI's response to 9/11. And it goes before what led up to 9/11 and what happened on 9/11 and afterwards. And I think you'll be amazed at the level, the global level of investigation and yet the intimate stories that are told in that podcast, including mine and my brother Tim's. And then I also recently released Where the Devil Belongs. And that's about the FBI's investigation of the Unabomber. And not only is our good friend Jim Fitzgerald, one of mine and Laura's and Lisa's good friends, and former FBI linguistic profiler Jim Fitzgerald involved in that, but also I was really happy to tell the story of Kathy Puckett, who is a amazingly talented woman who worked her way up in the FBI after being an intelligence officer in the Navy, and I think one of the first 70 women in the FBI, telling her story rather than just the guy's stories. Mm-hmm. And that's right. Something. Yeah, I think that when I discovered her story, I immediately put her up front, and she was such a pleasure to work with, such an insightful woman and a strong woman. And I think everybody should listen to her story and how she helped take down the Unabomber, as well as Jim Fitzgerald and a bunch of other FBI and local law enforcement. But I think those are probably the top three things that I'd like to talk about.
Sounds good, Jim. You've got a lot going on next year as well. And I'm glad that you did the female POV, because we always get written out of our own successes.
She did, literally. She got written out of the book that the top three ranking FBI people wrote about the story. And it's such a shame. And that is really what inspired me to say, this is your turn. So Kathy Puckett, Special Agent Kathy Puckett.
Yay.
Go Kathy. What about you, Lisa?
Oh, you know, I don't listen to any true crime podcasts other than
you
ours.
Don't? Oh my goodness, I didn't know that. Full disclosure.
No, sorry. I get enough. But I love Smartless. You know, we love Tim Ferriss.
Tim Ferriss is great.
Into The Bachelor. Sorry, Bachelor Nation. I love Rob Lowe's podcast, literally. But there is a very great, there's a great question. If a film was made about Real Crime Profile, who would I cast to play the three of us? Well, you got to go Robert De Niro for Jim. You got to go Gillian Anderson for Laura. And I think Melissa McCarthy would do a great job as me. So that's what I have to say about that. What other shows, guys, do you have any, as we wrap up, any recs on shows, movies you've seen?
Who shows? I'm going to go a bit left field, but I'm really enjoying Hawkeye at the moment. Florence Pugh just made an appearance, and I'm a huge fan of hers.
Oh, my God.
She's an incredible actor. So, yeah, that's one of my left field ones, because we can't do the heavy stuff all the time. We've got to do, you know, the superhero genre. And
well, especially with your partner.
Yeah, I get to watch all of... I didn't get to the Spider-Man premiere because they weren't allowing guests, so Umbe went off to that himself. But I do watch a lot of superhero and superhero content.
Right.
What about you, Jim? What have you watched recently?
Well, what's funny is a friend of mine just sort of casually mentioned this series, and it's called True Story. And Kevin Hart is starring in it with...
Wesley Snipes.
Yeah. And I have to say, I mean, it is a serious dramatic role in which Kevin Hart is kind of playing himself, but he does it in, you know, in a very dark version of himself. But it's actually very well done. I may not love Wesley Snipes' portrayal. I think it's a little bit shallow, but I think the show not only kept my attention, but literally the ending just blew me away, So that was, you know, it was sort of a fantasy kind of thing, but, you know, but related to crime. But other than that, you know, I have been, unlike Lisa, I have been sort of going down rabbit holes, I guess, on different podcasts. And one of the things I do to sort of to escape, you know, the violence of what we actually do for a profession, Laura, is I'll go on YouTube and literally just sort of go down these wormholes of, you know, America's Got Talent or Britain's Got Talent or American Idol and those and The Voice, and just listen to young people and old people who have incredible talent. And it's just like such a revelation. And to me, that's heartwarming. That shows me, you know, not only are humans amazing and fascinating, but I love the stories behind them. And it's really, that's my escape.
I love that. So were you tuning in to Sex and the City, Jim? Because that's my other little escape, and I did watch it. But you're both laughing, so I know you didn't, probably.
I didn't, but if you're telling me it was great, maybe I will. Maybe that's another escape.
But you love New York, so you probably, you know, would like it just because of what
I'd recognize
seeing.
A lot of it, yeah.
Right. And I know you're a fashionista. You take your fashion very seriously, Jim. I can see, well, you know, your hat and Snoopy, you're matching today.
Yes, well, you know, I had to be festive, you know, but I do understand why you would like it. And that was a phenomenon. I mean, sometimes I go back and watch Seinfeld because that is so New York City. And that always brings back some great memories, especially like every time he locks the door and there's four padlocks on the lock, right, and everything. That's so New York. Yeah.
Well, my rec is going to be, I've been deep in the binge of Peaky Blinders. Blinders. Oh, you got to watch it with the subtitles on. It's so
good.
You've
got to work on your accent though. Lisa.
Oh, I know. It's horrible. But Helen McCrory, you know, any actors who are, you know, listening or watching, everything you need to know about acting is in her performance. I mean, her shoulder blades deserved Emmys. I mean, she's fantastic. And the wallpaper, oh my gosh. It's this foil-backed wallpaper that brings light into these very dark spaces. It's just fantastic. And then I just watched Power of the Dog with Benedict Cumberbatch, Kirsten Dunst, and Jesse Plemons. Jane Campion is back at it again. I loved it. I loved it. A lot of people are like, didn't understand the ending. I got it and I loved it. So those are my
My list. But I will say, Lisa, Peaky Blinders is one of my top three shows of all time. That and Happy Valley. I'm kind of hankering after some Happy Valley.
Laura,
you know, I really
Laura,
to
you're gonna
again. I think
you're gonna have to act as my interpreter. I even put on the subtitles and I could not keep up. I couldn't understand, even when I knew the words that were coming out their mouths. I couldn't
understand.
I knew
understand
you were
going to say that, Jim.
I
know. It's really hard.
It's
difficult.
It really is.
But the subtitle should help you, but it's really worth it. It's such a brilliant show.
So
it's
good.
So well acted.
Yeah.
I love the shoulder blades getting an Emmy. I mean,
oh my God. Her whole spine. I mean, rest in peace, Helen, but she was amazing.
Yeah. RIP, absolutely.
Yeah. All right. Well, one last thing. I think Alienist was a great show too, and that I mean, I don't know if you guys, my niece Mariana, the lead character reminded me so much of Mariana. It was amazing, but I thought that was really well done. You know, it was a great period piece, and you know, I love the whole Sherlock Holmes of it, and that is, you know, it's sort of the precursor to FBI Profilers, which I was fortunate enough to be. So I love that show too.
Oh, and the pilot that I worked on, Reservation Dogs, that show is nominated for People's Choice Awards for Best Ensemble and a whole bunch of awesome. Other awards. I'm so happy to see that happening and to have been a small part of it. So I hope you all are checking that out on FX, on Hulu. That was just a highlight of my year. So, all right.
Yeah, and we will be watching Maid at some point as well. Yes. I mean, admittedly, I haven't been able to do too much dark all the time with baby Raffi, and I haven't had a huge amount of time to listen to content or watch things, but I've still got lots of things on my list. So we will do Maid at some point in the near future, I think, won't we?
And I think, you know, it's always nice at year end to do a little shout out, to a couple of our friend podcasts, and especially people like Truth and Justice, Bob. You know, Bob, I can't say enough about him. I mean, what a great friend, and what an amazing investigator and podcaster. And the fact that over this past year, he actually helped get a wrongfully convicted man exonerated and out. And that's an amazing thing. Yeah. So, Bob Ruff, you're the man.
He certainly is. And on that note, anything else? So we wish you all the best to have a safe and happy holidays. We're so grateful for you. We've had just an amazing year. Your emails and all the threads and all of your support has just meant the world.
Absolutely. And there was one request which I would like to grant, if you and Laura have nothing further to say. Laura, do you want to say anything before
I just have one recommendation on a podcast for people. For go listen to Isla Traquair's The Storyteller. I think she's done a brilliant job. You know Isla, Jim, and she's a BBC and former BBC journalist. She's done a brilliant job of piecing together a cold case in particular, and I actually helped her with some of the analysis on it, but it is brilliantly done. And I think it's really important that for those independent podcasts to get some shout outs, because there's lots that are on big platforms and have publicists and everyone who support them, big operations. And then you get indies like Isla's, where she's pieced it together herself and got her various relatives doing accents of, you know, reads like they're actors for some of the characters. But The Storyteller, Violent Delights, definitely go and have a listen to that. And Sarah Turney, Voices of Justice, her sister's case is coming up to trial soon, and she can't talk too much about her own sister who went missing and was murdered. But she now also has a podcast on Spotify where she talks about other cases. So she's been a great advocate for her sister and now for other families. So they're my two recs on pods.
Awesome.
So go ahead, Jim.
All right. Well, so to everybody out there, happy holidays. And we hope that you get to spend time with your family and loved ones. And we will continue to do our analysis together and hopefully bring you some insights and hopefully bring you some good things as a result of our efforts at educating and helping people who are victimized by crime. And if that's everything, then I'll say this is Real Crime Profile signing out.
If you like deeper analysis like this episode on topics like Making a Murderer, Mindhunter, Escape at Dannemora,
the case of Sally Challen, the teacher's pet, Lynette Dawson, the exonerated five in When They See Us, and the disappearance of Madeleine McCann, you can listen to RCP on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, or whatever platform you listen to us on. And please be sure, if you like what we do, to give us a 5-star review.
Thank you for listening to Real Crime Profile. Real Crime Profile is produced and edited by Paul Francis Sullivan. Sound engineering by Mike Thal. Music is composed by Simba Tsumba. Logo art by Jim Clementi. Real Crime Profile is produced by XG Productions and distributed by Wondery.
For advice and support if you're experiencing stalking in the UK, you can contact Paladin National Stalking Advocacy Service on 0203 866 4107. or you can go to the website where there's a lot of information and advice that you can follow on www.paladinservice.co.uk. If you're experiencing domestic abuse, you can call the National Domestic Violence Helpline for free on 0800 200 0247. In the US, if you're experiencing domestic abuse and need advice, shelter or counselling, you can call Genesis, the 24-hour hotline, on 214-946-4357. You can also go to their website for further advice or support, www.genesisshelter.org. And there's the domestic violence hotline on 800-799-7233.